Your money briefing is sponsored by Athene, where our innovative annuity solutions and unique crediting strategies are powered by unconventional thinking. We are driven to do more for you.
With your money briefing, I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Bitcoin's longest slump in its 10-year history has created what many are calling a crypto winter. So when is the thaw coming? We'll bring in the Journal's cryptocurrency reporter in a moment for some answers. First, these money and market stories you should know. From 2015 to 2018, labor force participation rate, or the share of Americans working or seeking work, stabilized around 63%. And that's defied expectations for declines as the population ages. Well, now the White House is pushing for policies to encourage more people to work as millions of baby boomers retire. The White House said the government could encourage greater labor force participation if it advanced policies that helped to reduce the cost of childcare and giving women greater incentive to work. Women in their late 20s and early 30s have been driving up the labor force participation rate of prime age workers between ages 25 and 54 since 2016. However, the overall labor force rate for women remains below the rate for men. And a recent Federal Reserve study found more than 60% of working age women who aren't working or are working part-time and have a young child said childcare played a role in their work decision. And a study from the National Academy of Sciences reveals that women who have a male twin were less likely than women with a twin sister to graduate high school or finish college, get married, or have children. The women with a male twin were 15.2% less likely than women with a female twin to graduate from high school and 3.9% less likely to complete college. The study focused on children born in Norway from 1967 to 1978, including 13,800 twins out of a total of 728,800 people, and identified prenatal exposure to the male twin's testosterone as the cause, rather than to the experience of being raised with a brother. In fact, the same pattern held even among women whose male twin died within a year or a few weeks.
Your money briefing is sponsored by Athene, where our innovative annuity solutions and unique crediting strategies are powered by unconventional thinking. We are driven to do more for you.
Call it the winter of our discontents, call it darkness before dawn. Whatever you call it, Bitcoin's longest slump in its 10-year history has left many cryptocurrency investors out in the cold, waiting for an uptick. And the Journal's cryptocurrency reporter Paul Vigna is here to sort it out. So, Paul, it's not just Bitcoin that's in a significant slump here. The total market value of all cryptocurrencies is down, I saw in your story, 85% from its peak in from January last year.
Sure, and that's not even the worst. I mean, it was down more. It is come. You know, I'm using air quotes. Come back a little bit. You haven't had a lot of movement. The interesting thing is that you can look at Bitcoin you can draw a couple of sharp lines in its timeline. 2017 was a huge run up. 2018 was a huge run down. Now we're at 2019, and the rundown is still going on. And the thing is that people were surprised by how long this has lasted. Everybody thought, well, 2017, these numbers are, you know, there's so much momentum and it's so much speculation. This will never stay. They hit 20,000, right? This will never stay. We'll come down a little bit, whatever. 2018, that actually happened. And they still were saying, well, it'll come back. You know, it's down now, but it'll come back. The summer comes around, it's still down. Summer 2018, still down. It'll come back. The fall comes around, still down, moving down. It'll come back. The end of 2018, they started realizing that not only was it not coming back, a lot of these startups and companies that had raised money in crypto terms and kept their money in crypto terms were now wiped out because the losses were so large.
There's a company you spoke to that said, all we can do right now is serve coffee. We're trying to avoid layoffs, but in terms of frills and office supplies, that we can't do
right.
that.
Right. That was Ledger, a company that makes these little hardware wallets. And they're one of the companies. They're in sort of a different bucket in terms of companies. They're a company that has a business that sells something for revenue and has raised money from the venture capital world. So those types of firms are now strongly into belt tightening mode. What has happened at a lot of other places is their treasuries got wiped out because they had a lot of money in crypto terms. So in November, December, you started to see layoffs. And we wrote about that at the time. And now what you have is now you are another 3 months out and you still have not had any momentum come back to the market. You haven't had any sort of new oomph come in. And now people are just saying, they call it crypto winter, and they've been calling it for this for a long time. Mm-hmm. Now people are just starting to say, when is this going to come back? And is it going to come back?
Well, the run-up in 2018 was largely due to momentum and speculation, not a lot of institutional
momentum and speculation.
Well, sure, and not a lot of institutional investors there to put the brakes on, to maybe have an adult in the room and such. Is that part of the reason why it's been such a precipitous and extended fall, because there is no institutional activity?
Yes, in that a big sort of, you know, white horse rescue for this market has been this idea that there are gazillions of dollars worth of institutional money sitting on the sidelines just waiting to come in. They've been saying that for 15 months now, and it hasn't happened. What has happened is a lot of the guardrails are being built. You have exchanges that are regulated. You have exchanges that are insured. You have exchanges that look in most respects, like a very typical, respectable financial services firm. There are places where institutional money could go if it wants to. Fidelity, everyone's heard of Fidelity. Mm-hmm. You know, Fidelity, they might be managing your 401k even. They are starting a crypto custody service. So they will buy and sell cryptocurrencies on behalf of their clients. That is starting out for their institutional clients, not retail, institutional.
Okay.
But they are building it. ICE, big financial services firm, ICE owns the NYSE. They are building a crypto futures business called Bakkt. Hasn't started yet. Keeps getting delayed. This was back in August or the fall. They were going to launch this thing. Then it was January. Now we're into March. So you have rails being built, but you still don't have that flood coming into the market yet. And in the meantime, you have all these businesses that, most people, the ones who aren't, and there is a slice of the crypto world that is pure fraud. I mean, it just is. But that's not what we're really focused on. That's not the main thing. You have a large group of people who got into this because they really believed this was going to be at least something very profitable for them, if not something actually revolutionary for the capital markets. That is what they're banking on. Their faith in that has not been shaken. One of the interesting things is that every single person I talked to for this article, without me prompting them, still talked about how much they believed in what they were doing. Hmm. It's just a question of, do we have enough money to fund our beliefs until this next upswing, until institutional money comes in, until something turns around? That's what they are waiting on now.
Well, I guess a sign that this could be going on for some time to come is the failure rate of the initial coin offerings. And you need that to come down in order to see progress?
The ICO market is really it's a complete story unto itself, really, the initial coin offering, right? This is a method of fundraising for startups. It's kind of a cross between an actual IPO, where you're selling securities to the public, and a crowdfunding platform, where you're just using the internet and a website on the internet to raise money from whomever. So it's a mix of crowdfunding and IPOs. Explodes in 2017. I think in 2017 they raised $6 billion, all these different startup funds. In 2018 it was $12 billion, dominated by a couple of big ones, but a lot of money. But it was a very, very, very ill-thought-out process. You had a lot of companies that were just, again, they were just straight-up frauds. You had a lot of companies that were really nothing more than an idea. They didn't have a product. They didn't have anything they were selling. They just had a great idea, and because people were throwing money at these ICOs, they raised money. So it was a phenomenon, but it was a very poorly planned out phenomenon, and to nobody's surprise, it collapsed. What will be interesting is, and I'm going to try to do a couple of articles about this over the next month or so, hopefully, is what replaces that. And that will be an interesting aspect of this whole crypto winter thing. When will it end? It was a good idea. The ICO idea was not bad. The idea that startups could go around Wall Street, go around Silicon Valley venture capitalists down on Sand Hill Road, you know, could find new pools of capital, new investors. The idea that investors could have access to startups, that they can never get access to that kind of an investment. It wasn't a bad idea. It was horribly executed. The question is, can they take that good idea and build an infrastructure around it that actually works? That's going to be something we're going to be looking for the next couple of months and years, even really.
So if that infrastructure is built and if there is some regulation that comes into play and the government gets involved and says, we just want to build some rules here so we don't have widespread catastrophic loss of money, do you think that will invite some of the money on the sidelines that's waiting?
Yeah, I do. And you do have that to an extent happening now. The SEC has been very active in this field. They really put the brakes on the ICO market because they stepped in and they said, if you're going to do this, you are going to follow our regulations. That put a big, big brake on it. Not that they were wrong, but that put a big brake on it. So the SEC is there. They're working on this now. Most other nations have addressed this to one extent or another. And you will see that play out. You will see the regulatory regimes come in and decide what guardrails this market needs, how it needs to be defined, how you balance. And I think the SEC has actually been very progressive in how they've handled it. I do think that they have tried to strike the balance between protecting investors from outright frauds and encouraging innovation. I do think that they keep those two things in mind, and they're trying to walk that line, and they're trying to lay down guardrails that will lead everybody the furthest down that road. That's not going to happen in 2 weeks or even 2 months or 6 months, but that is the process you want to see. Well, how do the regulators address the market? What rules do they set? And then how do people address? And then how do, you know, firms deal with that? How do companies that want to build the services and the infrastructure build the services and the infrastructure? How do startups start tapping into that pool of liquidity? Those giant pools of liquidity, really. I mean, you're talking about a market that potentially could be global. You mm-hmm. could go onto a web-based platform and put your project out there. Hey, I've got an idea. I want to build whatever, my app, you know. And potentially you could tap into anybody in the world who has money. It's a really good idea, but it is there's a lot that needs to be built before that can really kind of hit its fruition.
And people listening who have been following Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies for the better part of 10 years will say that there have been substantial downfalls and downturns in the past. 2011, there was a big downturn, but the market is just so much different. It's a different shape than it was back then.
It really is. I mean, for the first 5 years of Bitcoin's life, it was a tiny, it wasn't even a market. You couldn't even call it a market. It was really just an open source project of developers and enthusiasts, crypto anarchists, that kind of thing. After 2012, 2013, it started to get out into the mainstream, but it was still very tiny. So even back in 2013, 2014, 2015, you know, really the first 8 years of Bitcoin's life, it was a very small, tiny, rudimentary market. You have to keep that in mind. It was a rudimentary market. It was not a mature, established market like the capital markets, like for stocks and bonds. I mean, mm-hmm. these were basically jury-rigged claptrap exchanges that were just barely keeping up with the volume, the flow. So it was a tiny market. That's why you had just wild, wild price swings constantly. That's changed a little bit. These are larger markets now, still small, but larger markets, more, you know, mature, established exchanges. So it's starting to change, but it is still, the dynamic is always going to be, you're talking about a global 24/7 financial market, which is different than what we're used to.
Well, check out our coverage in the Wall Street Journal of that global 24/7 market. Paul Vigna's coverage and the rest of the markets team coverage on WSJ.com and the WSJ app. And Paul is good enough to come in our studio. Paul, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, you were good enough to have me come into your studio. So thanks, JR.
All right. And that's your Money Briefing. I'm JR Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.